Welcome, and thank you for joining us for another episode of KPMG's Inside International Tax, a podcast devoted to recent developments, observations, and trends related to U.S. international tax. I'm one of your hosts, Kristen Gamboa, a managing director in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. I'm joined today by my co-host, Gary Scanlon, a principal in the same group. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Kristen.
Today, we'll be discussing the recently proposed Section 987 regulations, which provide comprehensive guidance around the computation and recognition of gain and loss on transactions between taxpayers and their branches. As we'll discuss, the Section 987 proposed regs have gone through several iterations, and notably, these recent regs further defer the applicability of the only set of final regs that exist in this space. For our discussion today, we're joined by Kevin Brogan, a principal, and Gloria LaBerge, a senior manager, both in KPMG's WNT International Tax Practice. Kevin is a returning guest, and this episode marks Gloria's debut on the podcast. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having me, Kristen.
Hi, guys. I'm excited to be here.
The bulk of our discussion today is going to focus on the newest set of proposed regs under Section 987. But for those of us who are unfamiliar with Section 987 generally, Kevin, could you give us a brief primer on the provision? What's its purpose and effect?
Sure. So Section 987 is one of the few code sections we have for measuring taxable income when a taxpayer operates outside its own functional currency. It's kind of at its most basic level, Section 987 comes into play where a taxpayer operates a trader business in a functional currency that's different than its main functional currency. So when a taxpayer has a trader business, say a U.S. dollar taxpayer operates a trader business in a functional currency different than its own, so say a euro trader business, 987 tells you that the income or loss of that euro trader business should be computed in euro and then translated into its owner's functional currency, the U.S. dollar, at the average rate for the year. And then when distributions are subsequently made from that trader business to the owner, there's a truing up for how the value of the euro has changed from when initially included in income to when it has been distributed to the owner.
So that seems all pretty straightforward, but I suspect that you're going to tell me that it isn't, because why else would we need new 987 regs every generation? Before we dive into what the most recent regs say, Gloria, can you give a brief history of how we got here?
Under the statute, the true-up Kevin mentioned is achieved by making proper adjustments when there are remittances from the QBU to the owner.
There's been a lot of uncertainty around what constitutes a quote-unquote proper adjustment since we haven't had final and applicable regs, with one exception regarding deferral of gains or losses with respect to certain transactions. Taxpayers have been left to do something that's reasonable. So we start in 1991 when we got the first set of proposed regs. Those had a pretty simple, straightforward method where you track capital and earnings of a branch in an equity pool that's maintained in the functional currency of the branch, and a basis pool that's maintained in the functional currency of the taxpayer or owner. And then when you have remittances, you would compute gain or loss based on the spot rate on the date of the remittance compared to the pro rata portion of the basis pool that followed that remittance. Then in 2000, we get this notice that contemplates an earnings-only variation on the 91, which is the same pooling concept, except that you only track earnings of the branch in the various pools. Fast forward to 2006, there's a complete overhaul, and that is when we're introduced to this new approach called the Foreign Exchange Exposure Pool, or the FEEP method. It is significantly more complicated. It's based on reviewing the different items on the balance sheet. It has special rates depending on the type of assets and liabilities on the balance sheet, as well as different exchange rates that apply in computing the income that gets included at the taxpayer level. It took 10 years to finalize these regs, but in 2016, they were finalized with a deferred applicability date to try to give taxpayers a chance to get caught up to speed and be prepared for the transition to the new rules. But they have been subject to a number of deferrals, and the most recent one had deferred these regs to the beginning of this year, 2024. But then last November, we got a new set of regs that proposes to change the 2016 final regs. So the 2016 final regs that we have on the books will never go into effect as they're currently drafted. And the 2023 proposed regs have a general applicability date for tax years that will start on or after 1/1/2025.
So this is the third set of proposed 987 regs. Why did the government not just let the 2016 final regs come online rather than continuing to defer them and issuing these new proposed regs?
These new regs are substantially similar to 2016. It follows the same FEAP method, but there are some notable changes. One of the main changes is that certain types of entities and taxpayers that had been told before that the regs didn't apply to them. I want to be clear that the statute applied, it was just these regs didn't apply, are now brought within scope of these regs. And so it is giving them a chance to comment.
Got it. So what do the proposed regs say?
So at a very high level, the FEAP method requires you to compute unrecognized Section 987 gain or loss on an annual basis, and that amount will accumulate over time. So I guess it still keeps some sort of pool. And then when there's a remittance from the QBU to the taxpayer or owner, the taxpayer or owner will recognize a percentage of this accumulated Section 987 gain or loss. It's complex because it requires tracking of the QBU's balance sheet in the owner's functional currency using either the year-end spot rate or the average exchange rate for the year of accrual as a first step in calculating Section 987 gain or loss. And then you make adjustments to this amount for transfers between the QBU and the owner and adjustments to reflect the QBU's income and expenses. Then what you're left with is the gain or loss for the year. So that was a very simplified explanation, and there are a lot of details to the calculation that would take up too much of our time today, so we can save that discussion for another time.
Thanks. So since the FEAP method is more complicated, I would imagine that taxpayers that were recognizing 987 gain or loss were using the simplest approach. Kevin, is that true?
Yes. So most people have been using either the 1991 approach, which would track currency gain or loss with respect to both earnings and capital, or a variation of the 91 approach that just tracks 987 gain or loss with respect to earnings, both because the 1991 regs came first, so people would have started generally applying those first, and then second, because the later versions of the regulations were much more complicated. So since they never went final, people hadn't been on a hurry to kind of transition off of an easier method to those later methods.
Thanks, Kevin. So Gloria, you mentioned that the proposed regs are not scheduled to be effective until tax years beginning on or after 1/1/2025. So obviously many taxpayers haven't necessarily been applying the approach that's contained in the proposed regs. So there will obviously need to be some sort of transition into the new rules. What will happen when the regs become applicable on 1/1/2025?
So when they come into effect, taxpayers will need to transition to these regs as of the day before, so 12/31/2024. And using that date and the spot rate on that date, taxpayers will need to determine their pre-transition gain or loss, which is essentially the built-in gain or loss in the QBU. The pre-transition gain or loss is not recognized, but would either become a suspended loss in the hands of the taxpayer, or it would roll into the accumulated 987 gain or loss that will be recognized on future remittances. And alternatively, taxpayers could choose to amortize the pre-transition gain or loss over a 10-year period. There is a consistency requirement. So if the taxpayer wanted to amortize the pre-transition gain or loss, they would have to make that election with respect to all of their QBUs.
So Kevin, is this really something for the 2026 filing season and not something that taxpayers need to be worrying about before then?
No, there's a couple of things all taxpayers should really be looking into now. Like Gloria just explained, before you transition onto the new regs on 1/1/25, assuming they're finalized for that date, taxpayers will need to know what their pre-transition gain or loss is for each of their QBUs. And the first step in doing that is to figure out if each of the taxpayers in your group, so the U.S. Consolidated Group in each CFC, if they've been employing an eligible method. So you'll have to look at what you've historically been doing. And the regulations tell you that there's a couple options for what would be considered an eligible method. So the 1991 proposed regs would be an eligible method. Earnings only can be an eligible method if applied on a return originally filed before proposed regulations were released. 2006 and 2016 regulations can be eligible method. All these things that I just said were eligible methods. There's a caveat that they're only eligible if on transfers that would have constituted remittances that the taxpayer has been picking up 987 gain or loss. So there is a built-in requirement that to have an eligible method, you have to have been picking up 987 gain or loss currently. So the step one is to figure out if you have an eligible method. And if you do, you would be calculating what your pre-transition gain or loss is for each QBU. If you do not have an eligible method, you're going to have to go back and recreate from beginning of time for that QBU what your 987 gain or loss is up until the transition date under what the regs call a modified FEET method. It's basically the complicated FEET method Gloria walked us through, but it's simplified to two steps. So it's a bit easier to do, but it still takes a good amount of time to obviously go back and recreate that in the beginning of time. That's all going to be a good amount of work that will have to be done before you transition onto the regs at 1/1/25. So taxpayers should really make use of the year we're in the middle of now to start preparing that stuff and to assess if there are any distributions they'll want to make before the regs come into effect next year.
So Kevin, you and Gloria have talked about what happens with the transition and what to think about at that point. But what if you're a taxpayer that has good records and has been consistently applying Section 987 in a reasonable manner? Is there anything taxpayers should be thinking about now, or do they just not have to worry about these rules until they go to file their 2025 tax return?
So the proposed regulations actually contain a special rule that would accelerate the effective date of the 23 regulations in respect of a QBU that terminates now. And this rule is aimed at stopping a taxpayer from a QBU with an overall 987 loss from terminating a QBU and reporting all the loss on its tax return now to avoid the rule Gloria walked us through that would suspend a Section 987 pre-transition loss until a taxpayer has recognized a gain of the same sourcing character. So that's something to watch out for, is to not totally terminate a QBU now with a loss to avoid having that loss caught up in the suspension rules. But if taxpayers do have sizable 987 losses that they do want to report on the tax return, there is some ability to do some remittance planning where a taxpayer can remit from that QBU and recognize some of the loss. And as long as they don't remit substantially all of the QBU and cause a termination, then they'll be able to take some of that loss, at least on the return this year, rather than carry it into the new regulations with all the loss being suspended as pre-transition loss.
So if you're not engaging in any transactions, shutting down branches, or anything else that would make these regs apply early, as you just discussed, can you defer reading these rules until 2026?
So unfortunately, these regulations, when they go final, can have some P&L impact for taxpayers. Ordinarily, we think of Section 987 gain or loss as not having current P&L impact in the financial statements because 987 usually is not reported in the normal P&L of a company until the company disposes of the operating platform and has what's known as a CTA release, the currency translation adjustment release running through P&L. So even though the CTA, the 987 component of a financial statement, generally runs through the equity section of a balance sheet rather than P&L, if you have certain deferred tax assets and liabilities related to Section 987 recorded in your balance sheet, even though they don't typically go through P&L now, there are circumstances where a change in law, the impact of that, could run through P&L. So if these regulations go final and you have deferred tax assets related to Section 987 losses on your balance sheet, that the loss suspension rule could cause a taxpayer to be uncertain as to when they might be able to recognize a loss, because it could be suspended until they've had a gain of equal or greater amount of the same source and character, and they know exactly when that could be. They could end up having to put a valuation allowance up against that deferred tax asset, and that could have current P&L impacts in the financial statements. And so taxpayers really need to be assessing that now, because these regulations could go final in the summer, which could mean that's when the P&L impact would have to be assessed and booked, which would be well in advance of 1/1/25.
Thanks, Kevin. So obviously these regulations are only proposed, and we're talking about them as if they will be finalized and effective by the January 1st, 2025 proposed effective date. But Gloria, do we have any sense for when these regs may be finalized? And are there any areas in particular where you think we might see additional guidance or clarification?
Well, the comment period closed a few weeks ago, so these regs could be finalized as early as the summer, but it could also be as late as early next year. But we certainly expect that these are kind of the regs that will apply as we move into the 2025 tax year. I think we could get additional guidance with respect to partnerships, because even though these regs included some rules on how to treat Section 987 QBUs that are held within partnership structures, there are still some open questions, and I would expect there are a lot of comments on how partnerships can implement those rules. And then there will probably be some clarifying points on certain elections, for example, being able to amortize pre-transition gains or losses with respect to QBUs that terminated and were subject to these regs early.
Gloria, you mentioned earlier that the FEAP method is more complicated than an earlier proposal and what most taxpayers are currently using. In response to Executive Order 13789 issued in April 2017 under the Trump administration, which mandated that Treasury review significant regs issued near the end of the Obama administration to determine whether they could be made less burdensome, Treasury expressed its intention to allow taxpayers to use a simpler approach in computing 987 gain or loss. Did Treasury live up to their stated intention with these proposed rules? Were the rules actually simplified?
Treasury's response to the executive order said that they would provide for an election to apply a simpler approach, but that it would be subject to limitations on recognizing losses, and that they would revisit the transition rules that were included in the 2016 final reg package. And these regs are consistent with that stated intention. There are two primary elections that were included in this reg package. The first election is called the current rate election, and that election would permit you to translate the balance sheet into the owner's currency using the year-end spot rate every year, so on a mark-to-market basis. And then the income statement would be translated using the average rate for the year rather than special rates applying to certain items. If you make that election, loss limitation rules would apply, and any losses that you would have recognized on a remittance would be suspended and subject to the loss suspension rules and only recognized to the extent of gain recognized later. The second election is the annual recognition election. which is a variation of the annual termination election that was part of the 2016 proposed package. And if you make this election, there's still the complex process with respect to determining the owner functional currency value of the QBU, so on the balance sheet side. But on the income statement side, you would translate your income at the average rate for the year and then run through the FEEP calculation and the unrecognized Section 987 gain or loss you compute in the year is recognized in that year without regard to whether or not there was a remittance. You can make one or the other election, or you can make them both together.
Kevin, what should taxpayers be considering in deciding which elections to make?
The current rate election in particular might be useful to make because it can help the taxpayer avoid permanent differences with GAAP. So for GAAP, the 987 equivalent I referred to earlier, CTA, the currency translation, that is deferred for GAAP for a long time. You don't generally pick it up until the platform, so the operations are disposed of totally by the group. And if you have an indefinite reinvestment so that you're not going to bring the related cash back to the U.S., can be further deferred. But eventually there'll be a day of reckoning where those currency earnings will be recognized and the company will expect them to be taxed for U.S. tax purposes, right? So we'll be looking to benefit for any currency-related losses for all the earnings. And the FEEP method generally only measures currency gain or loss on liquid-type assets. It doesn't measure currency gain or loss with respect to what they call historic assets, so things like property, plant, equipment, inventory, things like that. So if you are under the FEET method, you will not have 987 gain or losses related to these historic methods. And then when you have the corresponding GAAP event, you will have an amount of currency gain or loss, which could be a loss, that will arise with respect to those assets. So you'll have a mismatch compared to what GAAP and tax think is the amount of currency gain or loss recognized. And that can be a bad thing. That can be a permanent difference. If book thinks there's a loss, you should get a tax benefit for, and you're never going to get one in the tax return. So when you make the current rate election, you end up measuring currency gain or loss with respect to all assets. So you know that you'll at least avoid a permanent difference at the end of days for your book and tax if you make the current rate election. Gloria mentioned that when you make the current rate election, you do become subject to the loss suspension rules under 987. Sometimes you can permanently lose a loss, but generally you will get it when there has been a disposition of the related QBU assets for tax purposes. So the current rate election can be useful. And if you really want to avoid the loss suspension rules when you make a current rate election, if you make an annual recognition election too, you can be not subject to the loss suspension rules as well. Those are two elections I think many taxpayers will want to consider making, in addition to the fact that they get you out of applying the FEET method, which is, you know, quite complicated.
Thanks, Kevin. One last question as we wrap up this discussion. Are there any knock-on effects from book tax differences caused by Section 987 gain or loss that taxpayers should consider?
I think we can think about CAMT first, because as I just said, the GAAP equivalent of 987, the CTA release, will often happen much later. And so that would be what would be for CAMT a difference in the taxable income base. The book income will look very different where you've made an annual recognition election for regular U.S. income tax purposes, because you'll be picking up the currency gain or loss each year. So that can be a regular tax CAMT difference that could drive a CAMT result. For things like FTCs, where you have 987 gains or losses that you're picking up each year because of the annual recognition event, or because you've maybe made the 10-year amortization election in connection with your pre-transition gain or loss, that is going to be generally foreign source gain or loss, maybe in your branch basket, maybe in your passive basket, if your QBUs hold passive assets. That is going to either enlarge if it's a gain your FTC capacity, or shrink if it's a loss your FTC capacity, and can result in taxpayers, where it's a loss, having to write off some of their FTCs, right? And so having a book cost if they have to put up a valuation allowance or just totally write off FTCs because they're not able to use them within the 10-year carry forward period. There can be lots to model out, kind of collateral impacts of choosing to accelerate 987 gain or loss inclusions under the elections by doing it annually, or deferring them by going into the regular FEET method and having remittances happen slowly over time.
Thank you, Kevin, and thank you, Gloria, both of you, for joining us today to discuss these interesting new rules. We'll definitely keep an eye out for final regs from Treasury and IRS at some point, hopefully later this year or early next year. As always, please stay tuned for future episodes of KPMG's Inside International Tax to stay up to speed on the latest developments in U.S. international tax. Until our next episode, take care.